Why can't APS just pay teachers more?
Can my child really learn in a classroom of 30?
Is public education as bad as the media and everyone else says it is?
Everyone has an opinion about Albuquerque public schools. But where do you go to sort out fact from fiction and rumor? Right here. Welcome to the APS Open Book Podcast with your host, Mark Goodrum.
Welcome to the APS Open Book Podcast, episode 12. And we have Josh Martinez here for eSports. I'm so glad we've got you on the show, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we were just I'm excited about this episode because it's something, eSports, that I think that the public is not hip to or know about, especially APS. Mm-hmm. So before you get into talking about what eSports is, how did you get involved with APS and how did they come to bringing you on board?
Well, I started out in APS about a year and a half ago as a field tech, just working out and doing normal IT stuff, fixing computers and plugging things in and helping out the teachers. And we heard that the NMAA had voted in to allow esports as an official activity. I think this was around August or September last year, 2018. So we heard about that, and in one of our kind of all hands meetings, I was asked to kind of look into that, just investigate it and see, because we had heard that one of our schools, La Cueva, was participating.
Okay.
So I took it upon myself and went and spoke with I made contact with the coach there and asked him about it. And he kind of brought us into the loop a little bit. He had been running an esports club for a couple years. And he was excited about it. He had been talking with NMAA. So we just kind of started to get a little bit more information and like, okay, well, we'll have a couple schools participating. That's going to be interesting. And then it sort of blew up from there a little bit. We sort of put out an all call to the schools asking them, you know, who's interested in participating in this. And we ended up having, I think we had about 12 to 15 representatives from different traditional high schools and some of the charter schools show up to our initial meeting, which was last November. It was kind of an exploratory meeting, and they showed up and they were like, how do we do this? How, you know, asking a lot of questions that we weren't prepared for, because we didn't, we weren't running the thing. We were just seeing who was interested.
Right.
So once we got that interest in it, we then decided, you know, my involvement became a little bit more and more. I was working on it part-time doing my normal duties, but meeting with assistant, or he was the director, not the executive director, but the director of IT. And it got bigger and better. And we reached out to some vendors and started getting some pricings on stuff, because we realized that the equipment that we had in the schools was not going to be adequate.
That was my next question.
Yeah. So we went out and kind of did the groundwork on that and purchased 5 machines for each of our traditional high schools in the city that wanted to participate. So it wasn't all 13 on board. I think we ended up in
You up for a minute. So you had to sell this to the administrators of APS.
We did, but it was a pretty easy sell.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how you did that.
Well, as I was working on it kind of independently on this smaller side project, it turns out that, you know, several levels and pay grades above me, they had also heard about it and sort of started a second, you know, kind of, we sort of started independently and we eventually merged them as I was doing a lot of the groundwork, talking to the coaches and meeting with the schools and stuff. And they were doing sort of the work on their end at the administration side at the higher level. And so we ended up merging our kind of our two little programs together and, they were on board. And
kudos
and it's been
to
great.
Them to have the force, the fortitude and the future in their minds.
Yeah, it was, it's been, honestly, it's been great. It's been pretty easy going for us so
far.
No pushback? We've had not anything significant. We've had, you know, some people who have expressed concerns, but we go out of our way to address those concerns and bring them bring them into the fold.
Well, let's move into it then. So esports, I'm a gray-haired guy stuck in my ways. What in the world is it?
Well, at its most basic level, esports is competitive video gaming.
Okay.
But the esports, you know, that word encompasses so much more than that. There's an entire industry built up around it that is, it all of course revolves around video games, but it is much larger than that. There's people that are, you know, making their money doing streaming.
Right.
There are people that are communication majors who are becoming professional commentators that they called shoutcasters for the games.
Wow.
So, but at its most basic level, it's competitive video games.
As well as, I would imagine, coding and...
Absolutely, yeah.
Developing their own games.
Yeah, and things outside of games, you know, the streaming platforms, they need coders to help streamline their processes, you know,
sure.
Like how are we going to get higher bit rates? How are we going to get better and better video quality? And there's just so many things that encompass esports. It's a massive, massive industry.
And starting from the beginning at the level of the kids, you're teaching teamwork,
mm-hmm.
organization, discipline, yada, yada.
Yep. Yeah. It's anything that all the benefits of traditional sports and other activities are present here. The games that we play are mostly, actually, they're all team-based stuff. So you have to learn communication. You have to learn strategy. You have to learn teamwork. You've got to rely on these other people. You know, it's a whole ecosystem that's just, it's great when it all comes together.
And I think, you know, for a person like myself growing up in the 60s and the 70s, you know, you have to wrap your mind around what's new coming to education, what the kids are into now. But when you say the word video games, you know, when you say that term, it pulls up all of these things of what's been in the media. You know, the school shootings, what's possibly happening with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You have to fight that.
It definitely has a stigma.
So talk a little bit about that.
Well,
how do you deal with that?
We deal with it by just speaking to the community and trying to educate people and let them know. Like, a lot of that is just, it's, you know, kind of a moral panic that doesn't really have any basis in things. As far as the video games cause violent tendencies in children, that is just, if you do any moderate research on it, you'll find that it's false. Like, there's been no correlation for anything. In 2011, the Supreme Court ruled that there was no findings that correlates video games with violence. And it's an easy scapegoat because so many children play video games. Like, 90% of kids play video games. So if one of them, you know, does a school shooting or something, they can point to that, but they can also point to them eating a hamburger or driving a car or something like that. You know, it's just, it's so ubiquitous now that it's a very easy, easy scapegoat.
And that leads us to, it is approved by the NMAA as well.
Yes, yeah, it's an approved activity, and they are ensuring that the games that are chosen to play are, they meet a certain standard. You know, there's not, it's not even a remote possibility that there will be
talk
a first
person
shooter.
Give us
an
example for those that are listening. What type of games are the students involved with?
So currently there are three official games at the NMAA that they play at the NMAA level, and that is League of Legends, which a lot of people have probably heard of. It's one of the most popular games in the world.
Yeah.
Rocket League, which is kind of a sports game, sports-like game, and then another game called Smite, which is similar to League of Legends, but they're different. You know, none of these games are, so Smite and League of Legends are called MOBAs. Multiplayer Online Battle Arena is the acronym.
MOBOs?
MOBA, M-O-B-A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they are team-based games, so 5 versus 5, and your goal is to work together to beat the other team by... they're very complex games. It's really hard to describe, and it's not as easy as Rocket League to describe, but it's all based around individual skill, but more importantly, teamwork. You can't win based on just how good you are. You need to work with your team. There are objectives around the map that you need to secure. There are strategies and tactics that involve, you know, coordination and communication.
Making split-second decisions, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, hand-eye coordination in that, so that's where the individual skill comes in. But there's also, you know, there's usually a team captain who's kind of in charge of coordinating the rest of the other four players. Like, here's what we're going to do next. We're going to do this, and then we're going to move to this. And they're constantly adjusting and changing up strategies on the fly.
Like life.
Like life, yeah. So there's a lot... There's a lot of educating in that. And Rocket League is much easier to describe. It's basically soccer, but with cars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, while we're on the games issue, so I was on, correct me if I'm wrong, Twitch. Is that right?
Twitch.tv,
okay.
Yes.
For all those out there, see, I'm hip. Okay. And explain exactly what that is.
So Twitch is an online streaming platform
right.
Where... individual people, anybody can do it. But you get on there, it copies your screen in the game that you're playing, and you play the video game, and you can stream it to anybody that has access to the internet.
Okay.
So that is really helped to popularize esports and video gaming and make it more mainstream. I mean, it's a career path for a lot of people now. You can make money streaming.
Would this be a fair statement if I said that if you're not familiar with the video games or esports, you could go there and just take a look at visually what you're going to see?
Absolutely, yeah. It's, you know, with anything, there's a bit of a learning curve to it. Uh-huh. You have to navigate their menus, but I think it's pretty straightforward. But you find a game and you can sit there and watch it. And some of the, you know, the more popular streamers, they have this whole production value set up around it. So they have a webcam that is, you're watching them play the game, and they have overlays, which it'll show their name or the music they're listening to, or people, you know, they can send a message to the streamer and it'll read it on stream as they're playing the game. And a lot of the time, these content creators will describe what they're doing. They will talk through the game that they're playing. If it's a story-based game, they will, you know, discuss with the, because there's also a chat room built into each of these things. So there's people discussing the game with that person, and they're interacting with these tens, hundreds, thousands of people all at once.
So now let's go over to the school aspect side of it. These teams are co-ed?
Yeah, they're co-ed, and they are, it's a no-cut activity, and anybody that wants to join can. It's probably one of the more, if not the most inclusive activity that anybody can participate in.
No cut.
The only things is you can have, so you have a varsity team and then as many JV teams as you want. If you have 10 kids on your team, cool. You have enough for a varsity team and a JV team. If you have 40 kids on the team, then you have one varsity team and as many of the junior varsities as you want to.
How many is on a team, did you say?
For League of Legends, it's 5. Same thing with Smite, and Rocket League is 3.
So it's according to what type of game?
Correct, yeah. And the students can only participate in one game.
Okay. Can you have this at the middle school?
Some of the middle schools, NMAA is not supporting it currently at the middle schools, but we do have some middle schools here that have started esports clubs and they are going full steam ahead with them. There's one in particular, James Monroe Middle School.
Oh, okay.
And they're competing on a national level with other middle schools around the country.
Okay.
So they've kind of taken it upon themselves, and we eventually want to get to where we can support them, but we have so many middle schools that would be really difficult.
It's kind of a grassroots.
It is, yeah, effort. To a certain extent. It has to start at the grassroots level.
If I want to be a coach, do I have to be on staff at the school? How does that work?
The coaching is, from what I understand, at the school level, it's up to the individual school. They're relatively independent in that factor. They can hire outside people. They just have to sign the coach's agreement or whatever they want. But for right now, it's all faculty members because it was the easiest ones to bring in. And as far as, like, we have people that are avid gamers, but they don't know. They're not coaches.
Right.
We have coaches that are not avid gamers. And we have some people that are neither or some weird mix in between. So what we're trying to do is we actually have a lot of support from some outside companies and vendors that are helping us to create a curriculum and a curriculum for the coaches themselves, but also a path to teach these coaches either about the game or how to be a coach.
Cool.
Or some combination thereof, because we want to, you know, we know that it's not, since it's such a new program, we're kind of having to work with what we've got. And if we have people that are passionate about it, we don't want to say, no, thank you, because there's no one else to really turn to. So we're saying, yes, please, and here's some stuff to help you out. We want you to create this program and be excellent at it.
You're sort of in a quagmire because you have this entity that started, it's growing, while you're still developing.
Yeah, it's
and moving forward.
It's an interesting balancing act.
Yeah, yeah, and you're in the middle of it all.
I am in the middle of it all, but it's where I want to be. It's
there
fun.
You go.
It's engaging.
So can you see this becoming an elective at the schools, or is it already?
It is not right now, but that is one of the things we are working on. We are working to develop a curriculum so it can become a class. One of the things that I wasn't aware of is that there are sports classes. I didn't know that you could take a baseball class where that takes up the last period of your day.
Right.
And I'm not sure what they do with that, but I know what we would like to do with esports.
Right.
And that is a lot of the curriculum. One of the big criticisms for it is, you know, it's a sedentary activity.
Right.
And to a certain extent, yes, it is. They're true about that. But that's why all of our curriculums that we're developing involve a nutrition aspect. And we would like to, you know, we can't say you have to, it's kind of up to the coaches, but some of the coaches are saying, well, we are going to do activity stuff. You know, every 30 minutes, everyone's going to get up and do stretches.
I saw that when I was doing some research on it about breaks and getting the kids up and moving and whatever. I didn't really dive into how detailed it was, but that would be good to do.
It is, yeah, and to teach them about how to, you know, nutrition and other things that, things surrounding it. And because none of these kids are, the culture, so I'm going a little side note here. The culture in gaming itself has really shifted away from being the basement dwelling nerd who like just yells for Hot Pockets and that's all they eat. And it's been fascinating development. So I've been aware and kind of involved at a just a consumer level in esports for a long time now. I would say that it really started to become mainstream in around 2010, which is around the time that Twitch TV launched and streaming became a thing.
Right.
But also when video game competitions and tournaments started to become more and more accessible to people through those platforms.
Right.
So the early teams that started up were, they were just basement dwelling nerds, you know, like they were, it was one guy who had a house that he invited his six really good friends and they all lived there in squalor and you got to, you'd watch them go to the competitions and they would be disheveled and you can tell they hadn't bathed in a while and they were like, you know, nutritionally, like they were, they all had scurvy or something. It was interesting. And so that started to shift. I kind of got out of the, I stopped tuning into all that stuff for a while as I finished college. And then when I got back into it, like 4 or 5 years later, I was watching another League of Legends tournament and one of these players came out and I recognized the guy's name. I did not recognize the person because now that they have the money and every, and you know, all of the eyes of the world are looking on them, they've become, they're into nutrition now. They all go to the gym. They're all, you know, they maintain their hygiene and it's incredible to see that transition and it, it, it's permeated the entire culture now. If you're watching stuff on Twitch, there are automated bots that tell you, hey, you've been watching for an hour. You should go drink some water. Have a glass of water or, you know, take a break or something like that. Like it's really, and it's become, it, it's interesting to see that where the culture is becoming, hey, let's be healthy.
But it had to do that if it wanted to go mainstream, correct?
I think that it was partially that it had to do that and partially that I think it naturally sort of evolved there as they had more and more eyes watching them. You know, those, the individual, like the popular streamers and stuff, they didn't want to, they had an image that they needed to maintain. And so, yeah, I think
it's
it was
all about the image.
It was pushed to that, but I think it might have gotten there anyway because, well, I mean, all through various influences. You want your players to be healthy too. So if you're going to start investing money in this, like, well, we're going to make sure that you're not going to be sick half of the year.
Let's talk about the students coming in from the school. You're the members coming in and that want to be a part. These are students that, sort of like our previous episode, possibly some of these students are some that maybe did not fit in band or your traditional activities, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's one of the major, major selling points and why we're kind of pursuing esports is because it does give a place for, you know, a lot of people that don't necessarily have a place in school where they don't feel that they belong. They now they all have a place to belong. And it's across every group in the school. We've had so many coaches say that it's astounding that the students that show up and are on their team, they'll have in one team, there's a starting quarterback for the football team and a star track athlete. And then you have, you know, a mathlete, somebody who they only do like the academic side of things. And then you have somebody who is not a member of any organization. Like they don't talk to anybody. They seemingly don't have any friends. Now all of a sudden they're here and they're joking around and they're palling around with the star quarterback, you
know? It gives them a place.
It gives, gives them a place and it's a place for everyone. There is absolutely no, we've had some people say, well, esports is inherently non-inclusive. And that just blew my mind because how can you even say that? Like it can bring anybody together and there are so many ways to bring that access to people. Like if we wanted to, if we had differently abled students that needed assistance, they make devices and peripherals so that they can play at the exact same level as anybody else. It's not like I want to go play soccer, but I can't for various reasons. If they want to play League of Legends or something with us, they can do that.
You know, it's all up, you talked about this earlier. It's all about the education of educating people like myself you know, that have some, a thought in my mind about video games, quote unquote.
Sure.
And, you know, and I have to be fair, back in my day with the kids growing up, we weren't shut it all down. I played Mario Kart and all mm-hmm. of that stuff myself and enjoyed it. But, you know, it did come to a point where life gets in the way and it's time to get a real job.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
You know? So a little side note, what do you tell your folks when you say that you're head of video games for the local public school system?
I've been doing so many odd, weird things. They're just like, oh, okay, cool. You know, as long as you're happy, go for it.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
But they don't play video games at all or even participate in that in any level, right. But you know, they understand that it's an important thing, or it should be an important thing.
It's moving forward. How has been the reaction from the staff and the schools that you've gone into?
We've had very positive reactions. Uh-huh. We have, of our 13 traditional schools, 12 of them are going to be participating in the upcoming season. So they all have the support of their principals. They have the support of us at the district level, trying to get them machines and making sure that their technology is up to snuff. And everything just kind of came together very, very well and easily, because I think a lot of people, especially educators, can see that this is important.
Sure.
You know, it has just as much
value
as any other traditional sport or any other activity. You know, right. It's got both an academic and a, right. Well, sort of an athletic side, you know, in yeah. that you get the teamwork yeah. and cooperation.
Equipment, you talked about briefly about that. So now, as you know, as a tech, you've got this pipeline coming in. Are the games, if I go to La Quaver and so forth, are the games played on an intranet, or is it available on internet to go out?
It's available on internet. Uh-huh. Internet. Everything is played. So they play on the machines at the locations, right. but everything is done on a server offsite that's hosted by the game company.
Okay.
So most of them, some of the games have, I think Rocket League, you can play on a local area network. Okay. So that would just be played in between the machines. But for instance, League of Legends, everything is done on their servers.
Give us a view of what a competition, for those that have never gone, I've never gone to one, what does it look like?
For us, so we had our first live event back in October, and we just tried to emulate what the professionals do.
Sure.
So for us, we had a large conference room that had a raised stage where we had five machines for each team on either side flanking the main screen, mm-hmm. where we were projecting the live, well, it's a slight delayed view of sure. the video game. So it's like watching... you know, like a sports, it's like going to a sports game sort right. of. It's just different, you know, it's a smaller venue and it's a little more, mm-hmm. but most of the higher level, like League of Legends or other stuff like that, they rent out the Staples Center or
yeah.
other like, yeah, actual sporting events, because they're the only place that can hold yeah. that many people. And right. you set up a stage, and it's very similar to any other sporting event. You get there and you can cheer on your competitors. You're watching the action happen live. You're there with, you know, other people that are a fan or, you right. know, rival team. And so you've got all of that going on.
Right. And on Twitch, you get a little bit of an idea like that when mm-hmm. you go to that website. I saw that. I sort of looked at that this weekend. For equipment, computers, if you're trying to get this at another school, how do you go about getting the right equipment? Who do they contact?
Well, that's what we're doing at the district level, is we're okay. kind of trying to take hold and guide them towards the right area, because we want them to, you know, this is expensive equipment.
Sure.
And we want them to purchase the right stuff where it's, some people want to go super cheap and that will work for now, but in a year or two, it's going to be outdated. So we're trying to future-proof it a little bit while not spending too much money. Mm-hmm. So we've worked with various vendors to get quotes on the tech specs that myself and the rest of our team approve of,
right.
And then we pass it off to them. Some schools like James Monroe are going out of their way to get grants to purchase their machines,
right.
Because we can't provide everything. You know, it's we still have to. It's going to yeah. take a while to get fully right. operational, but we are working towards that inevitable end. And these machines themselves, one of the next steps is after we get the esports program established, is dual use for these machines, because they're highly specialized devices, mm. but they can do a lot of stuff. So I would sure. like to also use them as educational tools.
Sure.
Because you can pair them with like a VR headset, a virtual reality headset,
right.
And suddenly you're a history class. Hey, let's go look at let's go look at the country that we're studying. There's lots of programs where you can take a walk through ancient Rome.
Yeah.
Or if you're doing a
go
biology
to a state
class,
park or whatever.
Go to a state park. A biology class can do a digital dissection of a frog or something. Or
it's an exciting time.
Yeah, there's so many uses for it. So we don't want these machines to just be used for esports. We want them to be multi-purpose.
The one thing I can see that could be, and I don't, it's been going on forever, that I can see that could throw a monkey wrench in all of this is that if you have a staff member or a parent or, you know, a coach there, and they great job, but then once that person leaves, you know, it happened to me. We had a GTV program at my school. Once that person leaves, things sort of all of a sudden fall apart.
Sure.
Some type of structure to make sure that you have the next person in line to take over for the next, you know, group coming up. Is there anything planned for that? I guess that goes back to your talk about the coaching class.
Yeah, so we would like to have, you know, a coach and an assistant coach for something like this, you know, in case the coach is indisposed or for whatever reason, there's still a backup coach.
Right.
But there's also, if the programs grow large enough, there could be one coach per each game, you know, one for League, one for Rocket League, and one for Smite.
Yeah.
So there's other avenues like that. And we have had experience with this. We had one coach who left recently, but luckily there were multiple people that stepped up.
Right.
And same thing, like they stepped in and they said, we'd like to do this, but, you know, I'm a gamer, I don't know how to coach, or I'm a coach, I don't know anything about the game. So that's where us at the district level, that's why we're having this support. So it's not at the individual school level where they just go, well, I guess our program's dead in the water for a year.
Right.
No, they can reach out to us. We can provide them with this curriculum, with this education and anything. At this point, it's kind of whatever they need, just let us know.
We're winging it.
Yeah, we'll do it. Yeah. Like, we want this to be a success for everybody.
That's right. And ultimately, it helps those kids.
Yeah, and that's really what it's all for. We're doing it.
Bringing them to school.
To help the kids. Yeah, we want them to be engaged at school.
Right. Grades?
Grades, there is it's an NMAA requirement.
Right.
It's a 2.0 grade point average with no failing grades. Right. And some of our other coaches have even established their own, like, much higher baselines for this because they want them. They know that we're in a kind of a interesting position, and they want to also be very good ambassadors, and they want to represent esports very well because they're passionate about this too. So they want their students and their players to be, you know, kind of the jewel of the schools.
Sure. Everybody wants it to work. Future games, any idea what might be down the road?
Not quite yet. Since NMAA and us at APS, we're still kind of establishing things.
Sure.
We do have so many requests all the time. I get emails from kids all the time asking, hey, are you going to play this game? Are you going to do this game? And some of them we just can't because they're like, hey, can we play Fortnite? I'm like, absolutely not.
Yeah, and talk briefly about that. You have your requirements of a certain kind
of games. Any first-person shooter is completely off the board. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But there's lots of other games that we could expand to, and that requires there's licensing issues and whatnot. So that's kind of the hindrance. Yeah. But there's lots of other games. There's 1v1 games that I would like to see, you know, with there's no teamwork in there, but they're way more about the strategy on the individual player, and they're very exciting to watch. I enjoy games like that. So there's work in the pipeline, but nothing that I can like speak to right now.
Man, I'm going to tell you, when you contacted me, this is exciting because I think if we want to teach our kids, if we want them to be engaged in school, we've got to think out the box.
Mm-hmm. And we have stories from coaches who are their students that were failing.
Right.
And they saw esports and they came and the coach said, yeah, but you got to get your grades up. Like, you can't participate this semester, but if you come back next semester and you show, like, you attend school and you've got, and they do.
There you go.
They're there. There's students that, you know, they didn't know what they were going to do or what they wanted to go to college for. Now they've got this and they're looking at other universities, places that have esports programs, schools they'd never considered before. And they're going, well, maybe I can start working in the esports field.
Right. And there's scholarships available.
There are. So at the collegiate level, there are lots and lots of scholarships. Last year, there were 200 colleges that offered a combined $15 million in scholarships to go play esports.
There you go.
And we ourselves at APS, we have our own scholarship to allow some of our lower income students to the chance to play, because there is a fee to play, of course.
Right. Yeah.
And so we're offering a scholarship for them to be able to join and participate. Because that's another thing, is we want this to be equitable access. We want this to be the same. That's why we purchased those machines for the schools, because we didn't want just the schools in the Northeast Heights to have a fully funded program and the schools in the South Valley have nothing. So we're giving everybody the same, because we want everybody to participate in this.
Hey, man, I really appreciate you coming in. This is great.
Yeah, I appreciate the chance to come in and talk about it.
Yeah, and it's exciting. I'm going to try to stay up. I'm going to go home and take a look at Twitch.
Watch some streams.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming by.
Absolutely. And thanks for having me.
Good luck to you in the future.
Sure.
And stay in touch.
Yeah, and if I could just plug our website real quick.
Absolutely.
We have, it's aps.edu/esports. There's lots of information on there about becoming a coach, about our scholarship that we offer, any upcoming programs that... Anything about live events or tournaments that we're doing, we'll all be there.
God bless you, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And also, this is our last episode of the 12 episodes of the podcast. I really want to take this time. A year ago, I went to Monica Amenta and the media office at APS to give them an idea, and really didn't think it was going to fly, but I didn't know about esports at the time, and they're thinking always in the future, and they said, let's make it work. And I want to thank them so much for their help with getting this on board, the connection with KANW, Michael Brasher, Kevin Otero being so patient with the rookie here, and I don't know anything of what I'm doing, and they've helped and held my hand through this whole process. More importantly, I want to thank the audience, past, present, and future, that have downloaded the podcast and will continue. We wanted to do this to showcase the great things that are happening in APS, and I think we've done that in these 12 episodes. Until next time, God bless, and always keep smiling.
This podcast is produced by Albuquerque Public Schools and KANW Public Radio. Special thanks to KANW Program Director Kevin Otero. Stay tuned for more meaningful conversation in the months ahead.